Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some NFL with Robert Mays from The Ringer. You can follow him on Twitter. Robert Mays is his handle. Robert, good morning. How are you?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. We'll start off with a question about a Pro Bowl snub. Not that the Pro Bowl matters really anymore. Not that many people care. But my producer and my co-host is not here, by the way, today, but they have had an argument, it seems like, for the past 3 years at least, or maybe longer, over who the better quarterback is, Phillip Rivers or Alex Smith. And then my co-host Nate declared victory after Alex Smith led the Chiefs to a win on Saturday night, seemingly to give the Chiefs the division title if they can close the show by winning one more game. But then the tide turned in my producer's favor as the Pro Bowl selections came out and Phillip Rivers made it ahead of Alex Smith. And so let's start there. Who should have been on the Pro Bowl? Brady, Roethlisberger, and which quarterback?
That's tough. I think over the course of this season, Alex Smith has probably been the more impressive quarterback. I mean, Phillip Rivers is a better quarterback than Alex Smith. I mean, I think that's something I feel very comfortable saying, but that's not what the Pro Bowl is. You know, the start Smith had to the season, I think, gives him a little bit of an edge. I know Rivers had that fantastic run, but the Chiefs are the best offense in football for part of this year, and I think that deserves acknowledgement. So I feel like I would have been better. I think I would have been happier if Smith had made the Pro Bowl this year, but I understand the argument. I mean, Rivers has been brilliant for most of the second half of the season, save for that game last week.
And so let's talk about that game on Saturday night, because if you just watch the two games that the Chiefs played against the Chargers this year, I mean, Rivers was terrible and threw a bunch of interceptions, and that's the difference in the Chiefs having the division lead or the Chargers having the division lead. Why did Rivers struggle so much against the Chiefs twice?
Those games happen, and I think especially on the road in Arrowhead when the Chiefs kind of find that perfect recipe for them. You know, Marcus Peters is alive again, which is very important. Justin Houston did a great job in that game, you know, bothering Rivers. That second interception was pretty much directly caused by Justin Houston. I mean, you're going to have those. You know, on the road against a really talented division opponent, those games come up during the season. I mean, look what happened with the Patriots going to Miami. It's just that the Chargers happen to be 1-5. And when you're 1-5, you can't afford those games later in the season. So, I mean, I just think that the Chiefs have enough on their depth chart top to bottom to cause problems for any team. And that's what happened on Saturday.
Okay, so I would love to get your opinion of this. What exactly are the Chiefs? Because at one point this season, it looked like they were the best team in football. Then they lost to the Bills at home. They lost to the Giants. They lost to the Jets. And it looked like they may not make the playoffs. Now they've won back-to-back games impressively against the Raiders and the Chargers. It seems like Kareem Hunt is back to what he was at the beginning of the season. Tyreek Hill is the best big play wide receiver right now in football, and Travis Kelce is Travis Kelce, and Alex Smith is playing better. The defense is playing better. They've added Darrell Revis. Like you said, Marcus Peters looks better after his one-game suspension. But I don't know what to make of this football team. So from the outside looking in, what are the Chiefs?
I think, I don't know what they are, but I know what they need to be, and that's the team we saw on Saturday. We need all for the Chiefs to do anything in the playoffs, you need all of those elements to show up. And in my mind, it starts with being able to run the ball. You know, Kareem Hunt is just good, period. I feel like the issue they had over that month-long stretch when they just couldn't move the ball was that the offensive line just was completely out of sync. And it wasn't one guy, necessarily. For the most part, it was everybody on the interior and Eric Fisher, you know, switching off kind of unfortunate snaps. You know, that's all you need. You need one guy to kind of falter every time. And if it's different every time, you're never going to run the ball. And that's exactly what happened. So with those guys kind of clicking a little bit better and them moving the ball on the ground, I think that's the foundation of this offense that needs to exist. Kareem Hunt needs to be the star and just the overall pillar of what they do. Scattered shots to Tyreek Hill down the field, and you let Travis Kelce be, you know, maybe the best pass-catching tight end in football. That's the recipe on that side of the ball, along with keeping Alex Smith clean, which if you can do that against the Chargers, you can do that against anybody. So I feel like if they have that combination of factors kind of happening on offense, and then again on defense, the pass rush affect the game, and you are opportunistic in the passing game, that's really their best shot. I feel like teams will be able to run the ball on them consistently. The Chargers can't do that against anybody, so that's why it didn't show up on Saturday. But there are going to be teams in the AFC playoffs that can really get it done on the ground. I don't know how well the Chiefs will hold up against that, but if they can take the ball away in the passing game, then that'll give them a chance.
So the Chiefs had the lead and the tiebreaker over the Chargers, and they just need one more win or one more loss by the Chargers, and it's a done deal. And many people expect that to happen when the Chiefs host the Dolphins at Arrowhead this Sunday. So let's say they do that. They'll host a playoff game in the first round of the playoffs, and most likely it's going to be the Baltimore Ravens. And that sounds crazy to say, especially this year. There's been so many unexpected results, but if things play out the way they're supposed to, it'll be Baltimore. If not, Tennessee or Buffalo are the other candidates, but most likely Baltimore. Let's just start there. Of those three teams, who's maybe the best matchup or the worst matchup for the Chiefs out of those three candidates?
I mean, I feel like Tennessee and Buffalo are kind of in the same tier. I'd probably rather play Buffalo over anyone else just because I think Buffalo's roster is the weakest. I think Tennessee is just a very average football team, pretty much below average. They have a negative point differential in the season. The Titans are not good. And I kind of think that both of those teams are going to fall out of the playoffs because the Bills play New England over the course of the, before the season ends. I think they're going to lose that game. The Titans play the Rams this week and the Jags in Week 17. And it's likely that both of them will have something to play for because the Rams still are in play for the bye, and Jacksonville will be until the end if they win this week. So if they lose, if Titans go 8-8 and the Bills go 9-7 and the Chargers go 9-7, the Chargers make the playoffs. So I think that could happen. I think the Chargers and the Ravens are in their own tier as AFC wildcard teams. They both have good defenses, and I think that's just kind of the recipe. Baltimore's defense, top to bottom, is excellent. And I think that will keep them in any game. And with that defense giving them a puncher's chance and Alex Collins playing the way he is, Joe Flacco willing to throw the ball downfield a little bit, I think Baltimore gets kind of scary. So I feel like that's easily the worst match of the three teams you mentioned, and there's really no chance the Chargers can get up to that five seed. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be the Ravens, and that's a scary proposition.
And so if the Ravens did play at the Chiefs, would you – I mean, it's going to be at Arrowhead, but I feel stupid even saying that because – That has meant nothing in the playoffs over the past decade and a half for the Chiefs.
it's almost a bad thing.
That's almost been a negative, right?
Yeah.
And so then how would you feel about a Ravens-Chiefs matchup in the playoffs at Arrowhead?
It's a fascinating game. I mean, I don't really know what to make of it. I feel like they'll be able to hit a shot against Baltimore secondary. I think that they're going to miss Jimmy Smith in that kind of game. You know, we'll see what they do against Kelsey. The Ravens are very, very good in the middle of their pass defense. You know, they have two strong safeties with Tony Jefferson and Eric Weddle. Their linebacker play is very good. So I feel like they have the recipe to slow Kansas City down, but I also don't know how well Baltimore will be able to move the ball against the Chiefs. I mean, they probably want to run it about every single time against that Chiefs defense, and that might be a way to get stuff done. I mean, the interior of their offensive line has started to click at the right time. There's a lot of injuries there. You know, they needed some time to gel, and it feels like they have. So we'll see what happens. And then I think that Baltimore's a worse matchup for pretty much anybody than any team thinks, but the Chiefs can absolutely win that game.
All right, let's talk about the rest of the AFC. There were so many different things to talk about after the final 3 minutes or so between New England and Pittsburgh. But, of course, the fallout is New England now controls their own destiny for the number one seed. In Pittsburgh, not only do they lose the game, but they lose Antonio Brown. And we have so many different things to talk about with what happened there at the end. What was your reaction to what we saw those final few minutes between New England and Pittsburgh?
I feel like it's more unfortunate for the Steelers than anything else. I mean, they outplayed New England in that game without Antonio Brown. They won that game. That's a touchdown. I don't understand I understand how the rule works. But by any rational definition, that's a touchdown. And it just is a really terrible break for the Steelers because they're such a good team at home. And if they could have gotten home field advantage and had that inside track, I feel like they probably would be going to the Super Bowl. And now it becomes a little bit more difficult. But I think that what you saw that entire game from Pittsburgh, was a recipe to beat the Patriots. Because what they didn't have last year was that secondary receiving option that could make New England pay for how they defended Antonio Brown. And if Brown comes back even at 85% for an AFC championship game between those two teams, and you have Bryant and Juju making the plays that they were making, the Steelers become virtually unstoppable if Roethlisberger's on. So I think that for the most part, it was a pretty encouraging showing. It just ended in the worst way imaginable, because now, most likely, that game goes through Gillette, and that's the last place the Steelers want to play.
How scary of a team is Jacksonville?
Very. I mean, I just think that at a certain point, when your defense is that good and that complete, it doesn't matter how volatile your offense is. I mean, they remind me a lot of the Broncos team that won with Peyton Manning's skeleton at quarterback. I just feel like the way they can change the game is so massive and just so overwhelming that they're going to be in it every single time. You know, they don't stop the run that well, but they're doing it better than they did early in the year. And they're so healthy on defense. And I think that's the biggest key. They really have every major piece. They haven't lost anyone. They've played the entire season with these guys. There's no good way to attack them. And I think that the way that, you know, the Steelers can run the ball but haven't that efficiently this year compared to years past, the way New England wants to play, I just feel like there aren't many matchups you can find against that Jacksonville team. And if they have one of those on days where Bortles just blacks out for four quarters and Fournette somehow can, you know, get his way to 100 yards, I think they can beat anybody.
Let's take a look at the NFC, because now with Carson Wentz hurt, you've got Nick Foles leading the Eagles. You've got Case Keenum leading the Vikings. The Saints and the Panthers could beat anybody. The Panthers really look scary right now. And the Rams look terrific against the Seahawks. I mean, I feel like that's the definition of being wide open. Those are all really good teams. Do you have any feel for who you think the favorite is in the NFC? What team you like the best?
No, I kind of want to build like a Showcase Showdown Price is Right wheel in my living room, and every Monday I'm just going to spin it, and whatever NFC team comes up, that's the best team in the NFC.
Right.
I literally don't know. I mean, every single team has a couple elements that could take them to the Super Bowl. I totally agree with you about Carolina. I think that their defensive front is playing so well, they really affect the game in that way. They've really figured out what McCaffrey is. If he never runs the ball again, I'd be happy. And having Greg Olsen back really changes the dynamic for them. If Newton plays well, they're terrifying. You know, Atlanta has all those guys on offense that will keep you up at night. I feel like the Rams, that was the most complete win a team has had this season, what they did to Seattle on Sunday. You know, with Aaron Donald just being able to wreck a game, and with what McVay has turned that offense into, they can beat anyone. Minnesota has maybe the most complete defense in the NFC. And then their offense somehow is a top five passing team. And we even talked about New Orleans. I mean, all year it's been Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, right? This is dominating running back duo. Michael Thomas is a Pro Bowl wide receiver. He destroyed that game against the Jets. He scored three touchdowns. Two of them were called back. I mean, it's every single one of those teams has such defined strengths and really hard to find weaknesses. I mean, I just feel like you could roll a dice to figure out who wins that conference. I honestly do.
Which quarterback would you have most faith in a playoff game? Nick Foles, Jared Goff, or Case Keenum?
It's a great question. I would put Foles third. I think that he's down that list for me just because we've seen what those other two guys can do all season. I mean, again, the Vikings have one of the most efficient passing games in football. And Keenum's going to make one or two head-scratching throws a game because that's kind of what his style is. I would probably feel best about Goff just because I feel best about that offensive infrastructure. I feel like they've done such a good job just building that scheme. So I think I feel best about him, but it's really close between him and Keenum. I mean, the throw Keenum hit to Stephon Diggs up the seam against Pittsburgh, I mean, that is just a ripped ball. He's been making those all season, and at a certain point, that's who he is. He's not the guy we saw last year in L.A.
Who's the MVP of the league?
Brady. I mean, I think that last drive was kind of what sealed it for me. I mean, it was so incremental between him and Wentz and everybody else. I think Antonio Brown absolutely had his shot. But with Wentz going down and now Antonio Brown getting hurt, I think it's hard to build a case for anybody else. I mean, Brady has been phenomenal all year. I think it just kind of seems ho-hum because he's Tom Brady. But the guy's completing nearly 70% of his passes, and he's likely going to throw for 5,000 yards. I mean, at a certain point, I mean, that matters. They're going to be the number one seed in the AFC most likely. I'm not sure who else you'd give it to.
I enjoyed your tweet about Jeff Fisher, and if people didn't read it, you tweeted, if the Bears hire Jeff Fisher, I am quitting football and moving to the moon. Do you think Jeff Fisher will be a head coach in the NFL next year?
If he is, then the NFL needs to reexamine everything it thinks about. Who should be a coach? Why? I mean, watching the Rams right now and seeing what sort of turnaround has happened there, how in any way could you think that Jeff Fisher is a good idea?
Like, I don't even know how to process the fact that they had Goff and Keenum and Foles all at the same time. I don't know what does that say about Jeff Fisher? I don't even know what that means, but it was interesting the fact that they were all on the same roster at the same time last year.
The irony is so strong. I've talked about Bill Barnwell a lot this week, and he's written about it, so have I, that if you're kind of trying to piece together then next year's Rams, who could kind of facilitate a similar turnaround. The Bears have a lot of the pieces. Their defense is underrated. They have a young quarterback who underperformed with not a great supporting cast, but I think more held back by the schematics and just the overall attitude of the head coach. And the fact that the team that has a chance to be this year's Rams would hire the head coach of last year's Rams is just a cruel irony that I am not willing to face at this point.
Okay, so if you're a GM and you're looking for like the next Sean McVay, the right guy to lead next year's Rams, what head coaching candidate are you most interested in?
It's hard to say just because at this point last year, Sean McVay wasn't that guy. I feel like we try to build the resumes for these guys, and we try to figure out what boxes need to be checked. And a lot of the time, it's never what you think. I mean, I know that somebody like Matt Nagy has been brought up all the time. Just the innovation that Kansas City had this year. He's been calling plays the last few weeks, and it's gone very well. At the same time, I mean, who knows? I feel like what's going to happen with McVay is that candidates that didn't seem obvious are going to get looks. Somebody like John DeFilippo in Philadelphia, the guy who has helped Wentz out, really helped construct that offense, or even Frank Reich, who's a little bit more of a traditional candidate. But I just think that we're going to have position coaches and everybody else that is young and figures to bring something innovative that is now on the table that wouldn't have been before, which is why the Jeff Fishers of the world, it just seems like that's not a thing right now. People are going to be looking for the next Sean McVay, and I think they're going to be looking for it in very weird places.
I'm glad you brought up Matt Nagy because we had this discussion yesterday. Everyone focuses so much on the Bill Belichick tree, and we went through that here in Kansas City with Scott Pioli and Romeo Crennel and everything else. I mean, it's the Andy Reid tree that has been far more successful, and so I think that's why Matt Nagy is going to get looks, especially after how Doug Peterson's looked. You look at the different coaches that have gone on and have success. And another guy that there's at least whispers that he's going to get looks is the special teams coach, Dave Tobe. And so, like, if you're an NFL team looking for a head coach, I mean, you need to look at the Andy Reid coaching staff before the Bill Belichick staff. That's where the success has been, right?
I totally agree. I mean, think about John Harbaugh. I mean, John Harbaugh, Doug Peterson, I mean, there's been a ton of guys that have found success. I think that in both New England and with Andy Reid, they build a program. It's not just a collection of players. It's not just, a bunch of lines drawn on paper. They build a program at those stops. And I think that matters. I think that's why they're successful. You can take Doug Peterson's spin on Andy Reid's offense to Philadelphia, but I think taking Andy Reid's approach to team building, just the way the week should work, all of those kind of that minutia of being an NFL head coach, that stuff is important. And I think that's the reason that people that have coached under Reid have been successful other places.
Yeah, Peterson, Harbaugh, Sean McDermott, Ron Rivera, Todd Bowles. It continues to grow, and so it'll be interesting to see if any other teams take Matt Nagy or Dave Tobe and try to recreate that success with their franchise. And, it's going to be interesting to see what John Dorsey does now that he's the GM of the Cleveland Browns. I'd like to ask you about that. John Dorsey, it was surprising when the Chiefs parted ways with John Dorsey. He waited for a while, and then took the Cleveland Browns coaching or GM position. And you could see with all the assets that they have, it looks like they have two picks in the top five and the ability to sign all the free agents he could possibly want because of their salary cap situation. But it's also it's the Cleveland Browns. Do you think that was a smart move by John Dorsey, or do you just need to stay away from the Cleveland Browns at all costs?
I think it's a smart move. I mean, I think if you're trying to build a franchise, that's a pretty good place to start. You have a ton of picks, a ton of cap space. And despite what John Dorsey says, they have some players on that team. I mean, there are some intriguing young players on that team. So I feel like just the overall foundation of what they have going there, plus the flexibility and just the, you know, Scrooge McDuckian amount of resources he has, I mean, that's a comfortable spot for pretty much any GM.
Would you hire a new head coach, or would you stick with Hugh?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, I don't think he's done anything to warrant keeping that job. I mean, I think part of the problem for what that team has been this year is that he took a quarterback that they drafted in the second round and treated him like an undrafted free agent. Like, there's absolutely no reason to have a short hook on a guy you took with a top 50 pick when you're not going to win any games. It just doesn't make any sense to me why you would do anything to harm even in the slightest way the development of a possible franchise quarterback when you're not going to win more than six games anyway. So, I mean, I just don't understand it. I mean, that just fragility of young players is something that I think is not taken, is taken for granted in the NFL. I think it's just something that people don't ever think about, and they should. They should really think about just providing the best possible infrastructure for the most important player in the sport. And the teams that don't do that are the ones that consistently fail.
It's like he treated him like a young starting pitcher with a pitch count, trying to protect his arm, kept yanking him out of games and getting tough situations.
I don't think he was trying to protect him. I think he was trying to teach him these misguided lessons.
Right.
Which, who cares? Making the guy play scared is not the answer here. He's going to throw some interceptions. Let him throw them.
All right, final question for you. Speaking of young quarterbacks, if the Chiefs roll and their offense looks good again against Miami and they wrap up the division, the last game of the year is at Denver. And if the Chiefs win, that game would have no impact on the standings. Would you continue to roll with continuity and keep the rhythm going with Alex Smith? Or would you take that opportunity to get some snaps for Patrick Mahomes the last game of the year?
I'd probably sit as many starters as you could. I just feel like it's the safe bet. I understand the continuity argument. I think that, you know, people are of different minds about it, but I just think that you play that safe. I mean, this is a team and an offense that's played together for a long time. I mean, Alex Smith knows what he's doing. I don't think he needs any more time to get comfortable. I feel like making sure he's healthy for when the games actually matter is probably the right move.
Hey, man, I hope that you don't move to the moon because we like having you on the show. So hopefully no Jeff Fisher.
You know what? If I went, I'd probably die. So that's right. The issue. I mean, and I think at that point, that'd be okay with me.
Right. We're rooting for you and against Jeff Fisher, my man. All right?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Robert.
Yep. See you guys.
That is Robert Mays from The Ringer. I mean, that's taking a stance right there. I mean, you could sit here.
It's respectable.
And you could talk about everything you said about Alex Smith and everything else.
I ain't moving to the moon, man. Hawaii, maybe.
Robert Mays will if the Bears hire Jeff Fisher. Right. More reports yesterday that Jeff Fisher is assembling his staff in anticipation of taking another job. So, guiding another team to 7-9. So, would you hire Jeff Fisher?
No. I mean.
Why not?
You know what? My opinion of him has vastly changed after his time in St. Louis, because I know there was a time after he spent time in Tennessee, I was like, yeah, that's you know what? I wouldn't mind having him here in Kansas City. And then
I thought he was great in Tennessee for a while.
Then seeing what he did in St. Louis and L.A., it's like, nope, I'm good. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you very much. So, no. Nope.
But still, when he wants to, I know he's gone to the goatee, but an unbelievable standalone mustache. But the Chiefs have the best standalone mustache.
Right.
And Andy Reid, so
can't beat it.
No need for that here. We'll take a break back after this on WHB.